This is the Yob ConvoCast. One-on-one conversations with your other brother's authors, community members, supporters, and friends.
What's up, friends, and welcome back to the Yob ConvoCast, conversations with beloved humans in the Your Other Brothers community and orbit. My name is Tom. I'm the co-founder editor of Your Other Brothers, and it's always a joyous day when a new voice enters the fold, somebody that y'all collectively have never heard, but I've heard his voice before, as has other members of our community. And he's great. I was so touched when he reached out, because I always love hearing from new people who would love to lend their voice to the show and to the stories that we're telling here at Your Other Brothers. But somebody that comes from far away, from a faraway land, and you're going to notice that right away as soon as words start tumbling out of his lips. So everybody welcome our other brother, Simon.
Hi, I'm so pleased to be here. I never feel more British than when I'm talking to, to people in the Yob community.
I love that.
But I pronounced the T in British.
You did. So you I did the Americanized pronunciation, the Americanized accent of a British accent, which is another level. Yeah. But you have the authentic British accent, which is awesome, because you are from indeed Britain. Yep.
I am. I'm from England and I live in Oxfordshire. Which people might know. I know it's not the first time you've had someone from this country or living in this country on, because Daniel's been on here, but I think it's your first authentic British voice.
Right, because we're gonna throw Daniel under the bus. Although, also to be fair, Daniel's a new British citizen, so technically he is British, but he is not a not a native British. But you are. You were born, raised, and I love how you even said Oxfordshire. Is that how you say it? Oxfordshire?
Oxfordshire, yes. Yeah, sure.
An American would say Oxfordshire. So.
Well, I grew up in Worcestershire, which is the one, like, no Americans can say Worcestershire correctly.
Oh, yeah. It's like W-O-R-C, right? W-O-R-C-E-S.
Yeah.
Which looks like Worcester.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But Worcestershire. Yeah, and we gave you the sauce.
You're absolutely welcome. People might know it from the sauce.
Yeah.
Well, Simon, this is great. You're right. You are the first native, maybe even the first native non-American. Well, no, well, other than Daniel. I'm trying to think if there's others. I'll have to check the records and see if we... there has to be a native Canadian somewhere in there. And apologies to you if I'm forgetting you in this moment. I don't have this well researched.
And they'll apologize.
I'm sure. Apologies to the native Canadians who may or may not have been on the show. But tell us about your life in Britain, because we've got a great episode today where we're just going to learn a little bit about your story growing up in a country outside of America, which is, I don't have the stats right in front of me, but I think America is roughly like 70 to 80% of our listenership. So it's a pretty healthy majority. And so it'd be awesome to just learn another narrative, another story from another culture. But tell us about life in Oxfordshire. Tell us about your life over there.
Right. Well, right now I live in a flat. There's, I don't know if anyone's keeping tally of Britishisms. My flat or my apartment with just my cat. And by day I work as a writer for a Christian charity. What else to say about today? I don't know, but I came to Oxford for university nearly 20 years ago, and I stayed here ever since.
Hmm. So is Oxfordshire, is it near Oxford, or are they totally unrelated?
So Oxford is the city, Oxfordshire is the county.
Oh.
So Oxford is a city within Oxfordshire, and I lived in Oxford for 13 years, and now I live in a tiny village. There's about 250 people in the village, about half an hour west of Oxford.
That is awesome. You know, I don't know if you know this, because you've been in Yob for a little while now, but I don't know if you know this about me, but I studied abroad at Oxford. Did you know that? Did that get to you?
I didn't.
Okay, well, let's
that.
Bond. Let's bond over that for a minute, because it was the summer of 2008. I don't know where you were in your life in the summer of 2008, but I studied abroad for 7 weeks, I believe. And I was stationed, I was living at Trinity College, if you're familiar, Trinity College.
Lovely.
And
yeah, of course.
I just remember I was on the third floor of like the gatehouse or whatever that building is. That's like the first building as soon as you get to the front of the college.
Yeah.
So I was on the top floor, had my own little flat so to speak. And I could look out over the street, the main street, whatever that street is in Oxford. And there's all these bicycles everywhere and cobblestones.
Broad Street.
It was beautiful. I would walk down to Worcester College. That's where my courses were, where I would go to my professor's offices for tutorial, not for a class, but for tutorial.
Yeah. I think I've been in that room. I think my friend Charlie had that room. So I used to go there a lot.
Did it have slanted roofs? Did it have slanted roofs?
Yeah. An ivy up the wall.
That's pretty remarkable.
That's so funny. So yeah, 2008 was actually the one year that I was not studying at Oxford. So I started Oxford in 2004 at Magdalen College. I worked for a year in 2007 to 2008, and then I went back and did a master's and a doctorate at Oxford as well. So yeah, you came and filled the gap of my studies. But I lived in Oxford. I worked at the Bodleian Library.
The Bodleian Library, where I had to take the pledge to not burn down the library, or like there's something about you can't set aflame books.
Do not kindle a flame therein. Yeah,
I swore. Yeah, I would never set flame to that building. That's so funny. I never did. No, that was a magical summer. That was my first time out of the country, and I played it safe largely throughout my college existence. But that was like leading into my senior year. So I wanted to go out with a bang. I wanted to do something, even though I was commuting from home and was very safe and introverted and didn't really interact with many people. I was like, I want to study abroad. I want to have some kind of like notable college experience. And it was part of my English program at the University of Georgia. And they do that all the time. Every year they take students over there to Oxford. So I just went for it. And, you know, that first week was rough. I was definitely in culture shock for sure. But by the end of that summer, I felt like I was thriving. Like I was shopping at British grocery stores, and I was booking trips to Stonehenge and Scotland. And I got to see all the things. And it was just a fun time.
That is the thing I noticed whenever North Americans come to the UK, it put us to shame by the distances you're willing to travel to visit things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for me, like, you know, an hour and a half journey is a long way. So like, I'm not going to go.
I have greater perspective now, because at the time I'd only seen the East Coast of America, basically, as far as our country goes. And now I've been crisscrossed across this country. I've been to Alaska. I've been to Hawaii. I've been all over. For lengths, weeks at a time, I've been on the road, months at a time. So yeah, going up and down across the UK and utilizing y'all's amazing train system I long for the day when America has a train system like so many places around the world. We do not have that.
But you didn't come across the word yob clearly whilst you were in the UK.
No.
That was my big reveal, is what the word yob means.
Yeah, and because we were talking about this episode and what we might talk about, and so I expect a lot of British to come out of you this episode, really maximize, really capitalize on your Britishness. But along the way, you mentioned something that yob means something in British, and I think I have like a vague recollection that it means something not great, but I honestly don't remember. I didn't Google it in anticipation of this episode. I wanted to hear it straight from your lips. So tell me what yob means in your culture, because I have no idea.
Yeah. But I wrote down the definition just to make sure I got it accurate. A yob is a rude, noisy, and aggressive young person. So
that's hilarious. A rude, aggressive young person.
It actually comes from... Yeah, it comes from backslang, where people, I think it was in London markets, used to say words backwards. So it is from the word boy backwards.
Right.
So you tend to hear it more like, I guess, people who vandalize something. You might be like, oh, it would have been a bunch of yobs who did that.
Wow.
That sort of context.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Which I thought was a clever little joke when I first joined Yob. Didn't realize that it was just a British word.
Yeah, and I only realized this a couple of years ago, because when we started Your Other Brothers and that acronym YOB developed, I didn't even notice that YOB backwards was B-O-Y, boy, until like, it was literal years into our existence. I was like, oh my gosh, backwards is boy. That felt providential to me, that the Lord was working
profound.
That how would we just come up with an acronym that when you make it backwards, it's boy, and we're all a bunch of boys in this community. It's just like so perfect. Also, I wanted to throw out there, I don't know if you're familiar, there's actually a band, like a rock band named Yob. And I didn't know that existed either until a few years ago. And I can't speak to them. I cannot endorse them. I also can't necessarily what's the opposite of endorse? Deny?
Disparage.
Disparage, yeah. Unrecommend. I can't do that either. I've never listened to Yob. But Yob is a rock band as well. They have a, I think their website is Yob is Love. Maybe yobislove.com. I have to, I'll double check. I won't link it in the description. You guys can check it out. You can manually type that in to see it.
Could be total fail.
Become a Yob fan if they suit you. But yeah. What are some other British words that we should know? You've already rattled off flat. I forget if you listed anything else, but yeah, we're just pronouncing certain words. Yeah. What are British sounding words just so we can really capitalize on this moment?
Well, I made a note of the two in my head. The British is obviously the correct version. So the American ones are ones that sort of I can't get my head around. One of which is niche, mm-hmm. which I believe you pronounce niche, and I can't cope with that.
It depends. Yeah, niche. If it's something, it's niche. Yeah, it depends the context. I can't think off the top of my head why one would say niche versus niche, but I've heard both. But yeah, you're right. I think more often than not, niche. Yeah.
Okay. And I think this one might be regional. How would you pronounce B-U-O-Y?
B-U-O-Y. So not boy. Buoy. I would pronounce it buoy.
Buoy. Yeah. Can't cope with buoy. but you say buoyant, right?
We do say buoyant, yes.
So inconsistent.
It's true.
Clique is another one, which I think is pronounced
click. You say clique? I kind of like clique.
You say clique. Yeah. I think we're just that much closer to France. Mm. So, you know, things that have it from French, we're more willing to embrace, you know, croissant rather than
croissant. A good one. Yeah, I love that pronunciation.
Sort of thing. what's penchant? We'd say instead of penchant.
Penchant.
Generally.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah, but it's because everyone takes French at school, so we a few things linger after we leave.
Yeah. What about A-L-U-M-I-N-U-M?
Well, trick question, not a word in English, so in British English, because we actually do spell it with the extra I in, so we say aluminium.
Oh, that makes sense. I always wondered about that, because there's phonetically, if you look at it, it's like, why are they saying, they're adding an extra syllable in there, but if you spell it differently, then that would make sense. Okay.
Yeah.
I love that though. That's one of my favorites.
Oregano, of course, is another classic. Oregano and basil.
Basil. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. But I love spellings. I love Canadian and then British spellings of things. Like you add extra U's to words like color and honor and favor. A lot of those words will have an O-U-R to it. So I kind of like that. Also apologize, realize, you'll spell those with S's instead of Z's. We call them Z's. You might call them normally. Z's.
We do, but I used to work for the Oxford Dictionary.
Of course you
Oxford Dictionaries. I can say it. And we spelled everything I-Z-E because that was British English spelling first. And then we said, obviously, and then it went to America and it died out here and S came in. And we got so many complaints about spelling things I-Z-E because so many people saying you're not spelling things the British way, and we'd have to dig it out saying actually in, you know, the 1400s we spelt it with a Z here.
Wow. Zeds. That's great. I love my last name starts with a Z. It's fantastic. Good old Z. Good.
I will say that Z is more logical. Yeah,
that's cool too. I always have to remember that other places call that letter something else. Is that the only letter that's different? Like, are all the other letters the same? Are they all called the same thing?
Yeah. All the others are the same.
I've always been annoyed with W. I don't know if there's any W fans out there. It's like every other letter is one syllable long, and W has all these extra syllables. And it's not even a W, it's a double V if you're drawing the shape the way that it's meant to be drawn. So W is by far my most problematic letter.
And I think in French it's W, so they say double V.
Oh, there you go. Well, anyway, this has been, if anything comes up, as I'm sure as this conversation unfolds, you'll say British things and our listeners will note them, their ears will perk up and like, oh, that's a different way to say that. But I love that. I love the international diversity that we are striving to build on here in Y-O-B, which is backwards B-O-Y.
Yeah.
Which is also pronounced boy, just like the way you would pronounce boy. So there you go.
It's all coming together.
There you go. So Simon, yeah, we got some time. We still got, you know, 20 or so minutes. I'd love to just learn, how did you get here? First of all, how did you discover Yob? Do you remember how you even came across our community? Kind of putting you on the spot, but I'm curious if there's any story there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a huge story, I guess, but maybe there is. So I will be getting there. I'm going to take a couple steps back. When I first realized I was gay and started exploring Christian perspectives on that, I guess, it was 2003 around. So those early years, I started reading a few books, a few things online, and anyone else who was exploring things at that time, remember that everything was written by straight people. And most of the stuff wasn't super compassionate. It was often theologically stuff I'd agree with, but it didn't really feel like the heart was necessarily in the right place. So I sort of put aside, like, I'm just not going to engage with this sort of thing. I know what my choice to be celibate. I've made that decision. And I don't need to, you know, I don't need to look into any more of this. And that was true for many years. And then maybe about 3 years ago, I thought, I'm going to dip a toe back in the water and see how people are writing and talking about this area now. Maybe people have moved on, again, not like changing their theology, but maybe writing about it in a more compassionate way. Maybe even some gay people are talking about it themselves. And I think my gateway back in might have been David Bennett's book, The War of Loves, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. And that was so encouraging to me that I started exploring other things. And I think I found Life on Side B first, just by Googling Side B podcasts. And then I found somebody, was either one of the hosts there or somebody who commented a lot on it on Instagram or something. And I thought, I'm going to see what other things they're following on Instagram, because maybe they would have similar thing, you know, be able to point me in a similar direction. And some sort of way it wove that way until I found the podcast first. Mm-hmm. So I started with the podcast, with the Your Other Brothers podcast, and just dove in, and then found the website. So yeah, it was basically part of my, I'm ready to jump back into the, I guess, Side B media world. And I was so encouraged that it wasn't just straight people talking, which, you know, it's a lot of straight people in the world.
That is so cool. Did you ever get to meet David Bennett at any point in Oxford or otherwise?
No, I mean, we do, I think he still lives in Oxford maybe, or maybe he's moved, but no, I did think about messaging him and be like, we should meet up, and we've got mutual friends and things. But
of course, the Side B world is very niche.
Yeah,
we have members of our community who have met him.
Nice. And I actually went to a church in Oxford back in 2004 to 2005, where I don't go there now, which was the church that Vaughan Roberts was leading and Sam Albury was the youth minister. Mm. Both names that people may well recognize, but at that point they had not publicly come out, so I did not realize that I was surrounded by Side B people who we could have had some good conversations.
Lurking around. I'm glad you found our content through that long train and trail, because social media and those algorithms and those suggestions and recommendations, like, it's helped. It's been a hurt to a lot of people, taking you down roads that you don't want to go, but it's also led people to communities like ours, which is the, I guess, more of a positive upturn from that. And yeah, it's just really cool. It's cool to have someone in the UK. We're the last, I guess, year or so now, we've been doing these Zoom calls with trying to align the time zones and get it to be a little more friendly toward your side of the world. And so it's been cool to see you on some of those calls and over the last however many months now, and just see our UK/European/African population slowly growing. We're getting some slow growth over there. So it's really cool that you're a part of that.
Yeah. And you may remember that I discovered that when I joined that call, that someone I went to university with was also on it.
That's so right.
That was a surprise to both
again,
of us.
It's a niche,
again,
niche lurking, world. Lurking. Yeah, we're all connected. So I love that. I love that that you're there. So shout out to anyone listening. If you're over there, we've got these Zoom calls every 2 weeks. And so we'd love to have you join the crew. It's a fun little call. It's like some people over there, we've got Americans and Canadians on their lunch breaks on this side of the pond. It's a nice mix of people. It's not just restricted to the European African people, but we got like a nice cross section there. I kind of jumped the gun there as far as how you found Yob. So why don't we zoom back even further? Like, how did you come to faith? What's like your faith journey, or how would you identify now as a follower of Jesus?
Sure. So my dad was a vicar. Is that a British term, or is that a universal term? A minister of the Church of England? He led a small rural Anglican church. So I grew up going to church. I would have called myself a Christian probably my whole life and always believed in God, but I hadn't really, I discovered later, actually made the commitment. But I had started going also to a youth church in a nearby town with some friends from church. Sorry, some friends from school. And they invited me to go to a thing called Spring Harvest, which for those who don't know, it's basically a Christian festival where you go and stay in these cabins and you've got talks and worship and all those sorts of things. And it was whilst I was there that somebody from the stage said in a talk about something else, he just mentioned in passing that somebody was gay and said, and that's a big no-no. And that was all she said about it at that point. And I had, at that point, I believed that Catholic Church were anti-gay and non-Catholic churches were fine with it. And that's because that's what we've been told in sort of in passing in our religious education at school. So I'd never looked into the Bible about this. It never been talked about in my church. It's never talked about at all, really, in any of the faith circles that I had moved in. So I was quite taken aback at that point. And I didn't even own a Bible. So I went to the gift shop and I looked up homosexuality in the index of the youth Bible that they had on the shelves. And it took me to Leviticus 18:22. And I was like, oh, this is not what I thought was in the Bible. And then a couple of days later, somebody at the front of that meeting said, I think there's somebody here who's struggling with homosexuality and I'd like to pray with you. And I was like, well, okay, that's me, I guess. So I guess the time that I first, and I went to pray with this great guy. So my first time discovering the side B world existed was also the time that I gave my life to Christ. It was, wow. So it all came in one big whirl. And at that point, because, you know, when you're first falling in love with Jesus properly, I don't know if everyone else experienced the same, but I was just like, sure, I will do anything that you ask of me because I'm so in love with you and this is great. So at that point, it was like, sure, I'll be celibate. Who cares? I love you, Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then it was only, you know, when the initial fervor plateaued to a sort of more normal state, that I was like, oh, I was 17. And I was like, oh, I've made quite a big choice as a 17-year-old. And I'm very grateful that I didn't go through a sort of attempt or hope that I would not be gay or pray away the gay or any of that sort of thing. God spoke to me quite clearly that I was gay for life, which I am very grateful for because it probably took away a period of heartache and striving. But it was quite a baptism of fire, I guess, to faith.
Mm. That's fascinating. I'm curious about, and I'm sure our listeners are mostly American listeners are too, like what is/was going back to when you were 17, like the cultural climate around homosexuality and faith, because my perception is America, religious fervor, a lot of Christianity, especially you go from, if you're familiar with the Bible Belt, which is like the Southern Midwestern mm-hmm. part of America, like that swath of territory is like very, a lot of people have some, I mean, you can have trauma in any part of the country or any part of the world, I suppose, but Bible Belt trauma is a special brand of trauma, I guess, in America, as far as reconciling homosexuality, reconciling faith, and how those have been at odds for a long time and still are very much at odds in much of America. But I'm curious, like, yeah, what if you've experienced any sort of that disconnect or tension between faith and sexuality within the church, within the greater culture, living in the UK as opposed to America?
First, I think it's important for me to acknowledge that I have the experience of a middle-class person in a rural area and a white person that may also be relevant. I think we'll get time to talk about class and masculinity because I think that class is obviously a much bigger mm-hmm. issue in the UK than it is in America, I think. But my experience of my churches would not be the same as one in a city, I think, probably okay. the one I grew up in. Just some context for what I'll say next. When I was trying to think about the main differences from what I perceive of the American church and what I know of the British church, the first is that the British church has much less cultural sway, much less political influence. There's far fewer Christians or practicing Christians in the UK. Like you might get 75% or something on a census saying they're Christian, but in terms of church going, I think it's about 8%, 7% or something in the UK. So what Christians think doesn't matter as much, I guess, in the wider scheme of the country. The monarch is technically the head of the Church of England and, you know, a lot of lip service is paid to it, but there isn't that same I guess, grassroots fervor or influence. And another is that there isn't really a political alignment for faith in this country. I know that the Christian right is such a thing in America. Obviously, there are Christians who aren't mm-hmm. right-wing, but there is that link. Whereas in the UK, there is traditionally a sort of maybe slightly right-wing feeling about rural churches, but the Archbishop of Canterbury, who's the head of the Church of England, is much more likely to speak out on left-wing issues. He's much more likely to speak about compassion in certain, he was recently very anti our current right-wing government's policy on refugees mm-hmm. in a way that we spoke out in a very left-wing way. And so that all trickles sort of down to that tension between sexuality and faith, and that I grew up under a left-wing government that was in power, in place at least, between 1997 and 2010. And that left-wing government were much more liberal, I guess, than the government that had gone before, certainly more liberal than the American governments that were around at the time. Margaret Thatcher had previously been the prime minister, and there was a lot of trauma around her leadership. There's a thing called Section 28, which was about not promoting homosexuality in schools, and people who grew up maybe 10 years older than me, I think probably have a lot of issues, maybe remaining trauma from that. But when I grew up in the church, it was much more likely, particularly in my sort of church, that it just wasn't talked about at all. So, there weren't people advocating for conversion therapy. There weren't people saying, hate slogans. There weren't people driving against it. It just wasn't a thing. So I had never heard it mentioned in my church. I didn't even know that there could be a thing that people would have any issues with it. I certainly didn't know any gay Christians. I didn't know any gay people at that point. I get the impression that it's always been a sort of quite big cultural touchstone for the church in America, and in this country, it just absolutely wasn't that.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating. I'm learning a lot just from listening to you share some of that and trying to compare it to this country. So are you open about your sexuality with people in your life, your family, starting with your family, but then zooming out to friends and church folk and church leadership, like anyone, any or all of the above?
I've only told you, Tom. I did start when I was 19. I told my brother first. He's my identical twin brother. We're very, very close.
He's not gay though, right?
He's not gay. I had part of me was really worried that he would be, and I was like, I was finding it quite hard. And I was like, I can cope with me being unhappy. I cannot cope with him being unhappy.
So, I'm laughing right now because I've joked, and some of the yobbers are already knowing what I'm about to say because I've mentioned it a few times. But this isn't an actual dream of mine, but it kind of is a dream of mine that one day we'll have identical twins in the Yob community who are both gay or queer or bi or however they self-identify. But it's like my dream for that to happen one day. So I think I already knew you had a twin that wasn't gay from previous sharings on Zoom calls, but one day, Simon.
I'm so sorry to disappoint. Yeah.
Continue with your summer.
Yeah. Later that year, I told my parents, I guess I was very blessed in that I went to all those conversations. I never had any fear that they would reject me or hate me or anything like that. It didn't even cross my mind. And so I'm very blessed that that was in that environment. I also didn't think that they might disagree with my choice or have different theology, which as far as I know, they don't. But again, I was quite naive, I think, approaching it that way. And we're a very close family, but we are very British in that we don't talk about emotional things. And so we basically have almost never spoken about it since. Mm. So we all know it, but we never talk about it. I talked a little bit about it in the last couple of years with them, but broadly, not at all.
You know, that can be a very American thing too, depending on where you're going to.
Repression. It goes everywhere.
I love John Oliver. I don't know if you know John Oliver, who's pretty big over here with his own HBO show, but like he's said something of that nature when he makes jokes about his upbringing or about like talking about your feelings or having conversations with your loved ones. Like he's made jokes about that I'm British, so we don't do that. Stereotype. There's always a kernel of truth in a stereotype, I suppose.
And yeah, I told a couple of really close friends. People I told at university, some of them were just because they're close friends. Generally, it was because most of my friends were women, and I'd clearly made them either think I was attracted to them or they were thinking we could go, we should date or something. So I was like, okay, I see. I need to make clear that that is not the case. And because, yeah, I mean, I haven't said this, but in terms of the scale, I am, I think in your parlance, plain or gay. So, you know,
shout out to Matt.
Yeah. As far down that side of the spectrum as you can get. And over the year, so I'm not completely out, in, you know, with everyone, but I've told dozens and dozens of people. So I tend to tell people if I'm relatively confident that they will agree with my theology, and exclusively Christians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks for sharing about that. In our remaining time, Simon, like, where do you see your life going from here? And it's okay if you have no idea where your life is going from here, but because I think that's the beauty/the tension of this community is that we're all kind of figuring this out together. We don't have necessarily generations of side B believers or however they want to identify believers to go by. You can pick out stories individually here and there, this person or that person or whatever. But as far as like a generation, an entire generation of people wanting to live out a traditional sexual ethic, despite being attracted to the same sex, how is that done? If people are living in singleness and celibacy, how is that done in a collective generational basis or some that are getting married in what are so-called mixed orientation marriages? Like, where do you see your life going as you piece this thing together?
Yeah, it's one of the things I find hard about side B life is that there are so few of the anticipated milestones to hit. It's hard to feel like you're maturing. Like, you know, people I know get married, have children, and those are the obvious next steps to maturing. And my only real ambition was to be able to afford my own place and to get a cat. And I've done those things now. So that's, I'm done. I'm finished. So yeah, I definitely would not consider a mixed orientation marriage. I don't think I'll ever probably live with anyone else again. I love living on my own. So I'm okay with that. I just really heavily invest in friendships and I'm very determined to make them work. I think it's awful that people never give the same work to friendships that they do to relationships. Yeah. It's just people assume they don't have to. So I want to keep developing the friendships I have. I've got four godchildren whom I really love. So I want to be in their lives, see them grow up. And I think maybe by the time this goes live, a fifth, I'm seeing my friend who just had a baby at the weekend. So let's see.
Add to the family.
But in general, I'm not really a planner. And I was, when I first decided to be celibate, or maybe after this, that initial fervor wore off, I did not see how I would ever be happy. And I did not think how I would be okay with it. I was like, I know this is what I'm called to, but I think I'm always just going to be a bit sad. And it's been more than 20 years and I'm doing fine. Mm. So I think it's been much easier and much better than I feared it would be. And I'm much, you know, the fact that I'm willing to come on this podcast, that I can talk to my friends about it was such a change in how I thought about sexuality and whether or not I could ever speak about it to other people 20 years ago. So I have few plans, but I have faith that God has got better ones.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I live alone as well. And there are lonely moments, just like I'm sure there are lonely moments for you. I don't want to speak words for you, but in general, I'm kind of with you there. I kind of like having my own space, my own culture. I don't have a cat. Mm. I don't anticipate a cat coming into my life anytime soon, but never say never. The Lord works in mysterious ways, but
I'll be praying.
Yeah. You never know. I guess one of my last questions was like, what is the, because I know we have a few guys in our community spread around the UK, but like, what is the side B community or what's the side B pulse over there? Like, have you been able to connect with other people that are gay or same sex attracted or however they would identify? Is that something that you're finding over there or not so much? Is it more of an online connection for you?
Yeah, I think I've said to you on a call before, I made this decision to be celibate when I was 17. And the first time I knowingly spoke to someone else who made the same decision, I was 35. So I went, you know, 18 years without any side B community at all. And I'm finding some now. Mm. There is, so a good friend of mine in Oxford, and who I already knew but didn't know this about him. We connected. I've met someone else since, and I'm going on the Yob Europe retreat. So, you know,
nice. I was wondering if you were.
Think of all the friends of you there. Yeah, yeah, we're off to Scotland.
Shout out to Daniel. Yeah, this is an update for the community. It might be too late to register at this point, so maybe I'll cut this from the episode. But I know that last time I had Daniel on here, he was talking about doing a potential retreat in like the Mediterranean or something, which in my mind was like, okay, that's a bold play when most of you are in the UK, but go for it. Go to the go to the Mediterranean.
We had a lot of back and forth.
So that was scraps. That was scraps. So a Scotland retreat sounds fantastic, though. I hope that's a great time. I'm glad you're going on that. That makes me smile. I'm glad. I hope that it's a really fun time in a few months later this year. I'll definitely have, I was going to say, I'll definitely have Daniel back to recap that. But Simon, I would love to have you back as well. You're a great listen.
Oh, anytime.
I could just listen to your voice. Thank you. It's like yeah, beautiful sounds in my ears. I wanted to ask you this as a final question. How often do you say or/hear the following word? Are you ready for the word?
I don't know where I am. Go for it.
How often do you say or hear this word in your everyday life? Cheerio.
I'm so sorry to disappoint. Literally never. Nobody says it.
Oh, that's so disappointing. Americans, sorry. He never says cheerio.
I think maybe if you asked us like 30, 40 years ago, you might have got people saying
cheerio.
It.
Cheerio. No. No one says cheerio on the way out the door or saying goodbye to somebody or anything like that.
We say goodbye. I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, I tried, y'all. No, this is great, though. So I love it. I love getting to just hear from new people and different people in this community. So if you're out there listening, if you live in the UK, if you live in Europe, if you live somewhere that is not America, and you want to get in touch, leave a comment on our podcast episode page, yourotherbrothers.com/podcast. You can find the episode with Simon on our ConvoCast page. Leave a comment, or if you prefer, you can send an email to me, tom@yourotherbrothers.com. If you just want to learn more about what the European retreat is all about or what the European community looks like, especially in the UK, yeah, let us know. I would love to see that population increase. And Simon, you know, no promises, but you know, it's been on my mind for a few years now to make a trip, to make an odyssey to the UK, to visit.
Yes, come back to visit. Oxford.
Oh, man. Yeah. I haven't been there since 2008, since that magical summer. Like, I had to get my California odyssey out of the way because we have this huge community in California. So I got to visit them last year, finally, after years of like buildup. And so now I think that's like my next big odyssey. So if I can make a trip to the UK and just get to visit around with all of you guys that are spread all over the place, like I would love to do that. So we're gonna lift that up to the Lord right now.
Amen.
Get Tom to the UK. I hope you'll be back, Simon. It was great. Thanks for taking the time and sharing a little bit of your story with us. It was awesome to hear.
Thank you so much. I loved it.
Very nice. All right, y'all. Until we cast our next convo with whomever that will be. See y'all later. Cheerio. Simon, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm down my tea, so that can get out of the way.
You got your tea.
With a queen on it, no less.
Queen tea. We got so much to riff on. I'm excited for so many things.